Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Wednesday, June 19th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com.
That's IdealPoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We'll be welcoming back Prepper Penny. She's already in the chat room. Thank you very much for joining us there. But we've got Prepper Penny, and she's going to be talking about getting started with canning. And this hits close to home with Jen and I, because even just as recently as this past weekend when it was Father's Day, she asked me when we were heading up to the big city if I wanted for Father's Day, and she had suggested maybe a pressure canner so we can can some of these goodies that's going to start coming out of the garden, which it's already started coming out of the garden. And I thought about it, and I was like, no, we'll wait a little bit, but we're still thinking about it. I mean, we could go out tonight and go and find and purchase a pressure canner, and I guess our only reservations are this, and it was answered to me very simply by someone who's canned for a very, very, very long time. If you're listening, I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was. But my only reservation is this, even though it's been done for who knows how many decades, how many years, maybe even hundreds of years, who knows. But my only concern is that I can see us wanting to do everything right for our family, organic food out of the garden, fresh vegetables, storing it, you know, whether it be prepping or just keeping it ready for our everyday meals. And I can just see all of us ending up in the hospital due to botulism. Just one of those in the back of my head. I just try, you know, if I'm freezing it, hey, I blanch it, I put it in the freezer, it's good to go. But with the process of the steps, you know, oh, did I get sidetracked and miss a step? Did I do this? Did I do that? But somebody who had canned for a long time, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was, basically put it as simple as this. You know, they were responsible growing up to do some cooking for the family, growing up as a child. And she was taught from her mother, it was a key thing when you're getting started to get the canned goods off the shelf, that when you opened whatever it was, the tomatoes, the pickles, the cucumbers, the squash, the green beans, whatever, when you open that jar, if you do not hear a swish, if you do not hear a pop, if air doesn't come rushing out, throw it out. Bottom line. Somebody else told me that, you know, if it was bad, you would probably be able to smell that it was bad, but I know that's not always the case. But she was taught, even as a little girl, helping mom out in the kitchen when she went to open the cans, if you did not open, and when you opened it, if you did not hear that swoosh of air, that pop, you know, then it was to throw it out. It was bad. That was the key. So it could be as simple as that. You know, you've got 9, 10, 12-year-olds helping to cook out in the kitchen. If that's what they're taught, hey, when you're opening this, I may not be paying attention. You must hear that swish of air, that pop, to know that this is fresh and was sealed correctly. So it's just one of those things. Maybe it is as simple as that, getting over my fears of canning. But who knows? We just may try it this year. You just never know. We may go out this weekend and try to find or maybe order offline a pressure canner. Now, we've done jellies and jams before. Well, I think that's safe, and canning green beans and what wouldn't be safe, but we've done jellies several times, but we don't have a pressure canner. We just basically have a big, deep pot that we fill the jars of jelly up about 2 to 3 inches above the tops of the jelly jars and bring to a boil for so many minutes and then take out. You know, so we do that way. But anyway, so today, Prepper Penny is going to be teaching us all about just getting started with canning. What are some of the equipment we need to get? Hence, Andy and Jennifer, when we go out this weekend, maybe to look for what we need or get online and try to order it. What do we need to start this canning process, and maybe a little bit about canning itself today on the radio show. So we're definitely looking forward to that with Prepper Penny. For host chat today, I wanted to share with you a few things. Number one, we are getting very close to embarking on our Tractor Supply Power to the Poultry Tour.
coming up next week. In fact, we will be hitting the road in 6 days. We'll head out on Tuesday, the 25th, and our first event will start on Wednesday, the 26th. And it's 5 events in 5 days through the Carolinas. I got to love it. We've got event number one, which is Wednesday. It's coming a week from today, Wednesday the 26th of June, in Anderson, South Carolina, at their local Tractor Supply, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday will be in Easley, South Carolina, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at their local Tractor Supply. That's Thursday the 27th. Friday the 28th, we will be in Weaverville, North Carolina, just north of Asheville, for a Friday night event, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. The 29th, I guess it would be on Saturday, next Saturday, the 29th, not this coming Saturday, but the following Saturday, the 29th of June. That'll be a great event. In fact, we'll be broadcasting live from location on that Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern. Then we'll have that Getting Started with Backyard Poultry workshop from 10 to 12, and which would include a book signing as well. That'll be Saturday, next Saturday, the 29th, in Asheville, North Carolina. Gotta love it. That's going to be a fun Saturday. And then the next day, Sunday, the 30th, we'll head on over to Newton, North Carolina, to the Newton Tractor Supply. Again, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. that Sunday afternoon. You can head to church, go out to eat, come over to Tractor Supply, go home and change clothes, then come over to the Tractor Supply, whatever. And again, every event includes a Getting Started with Backyard Poultry workshop and, of course, book signing and Q&A. The Saturday show in Asheville at 9 a.m. will include a live broadcast of this radio show on location. We hope to see you Carolinians. Is that right, Carolinians? on this tour through South and North Carolina. Looking forward to that. That'll start next week. And I'll be posting pictures of the tour and how much fun we're having and all the great people we're meeting on our Facebook page. So hopefully you'll follow that tour with us as well. Looking forward to, again, two more tours of Tractor Supply this year, maybe one in September, maybe the 1st of October, and then November as well, November, December. So we're looking forward to that. We'll keep you posted for all of that. Also during host chat, well, I guess we'll move on from host chat up to chickens in the news. If you follow us on Facebook, you've seen a couple of posts that we've made here the last 24 hours. One I posted yesterday, very interesting, and I saw it somewhere on Facebook, and I borrowed it / stole it. But I thought it was very interesting. It has a picture with the sizes of an iPad. I don't own an iPad. I don't own an iPhone. I don't own a smartphone. But it's a drawing of an iPad, not to scale, but it does have the measurements. Apparently an iPad is 9.50 inches tall and 7.31 inches wide. Okay, so about 10 inches by 7 inches is the size of an iPad. So many of you have an iPad. And under this drawing, this rendering of an iPad with the measurements, it states, your iPad is 2.445 inches bigger than the area each egg-laying chicken is given in a typical cage. And it goes on to say 95% of the consumed eggs in the U.S. are derived from caged hens. So 95% of the 95% of the consumed eggs in the U.S. are derived from caged hens, and your iPad. So next time you're buying eggs at the grocery store or you're looking down at your iPad, you may want to think that the size of that iPad is 2.445 inches bigger than the area each egg-laying hen is given in a typical cage. Found that interesting. I figured a lot of our fans would find that interesting. It's been shared coming up on 200 times, and very, very interesting. Lots of comments on our Facebook page about that. So just posted it because it's something to think about. There's a lot of people that buy eggs in the grocery store. No, somebody actually also posted on that's why I only buy free-range eggs. Okay. Well, that is very, very deceiving. I did a story with Fox News out of Atlanta, the local Fox affiliate, about 4 or 5 months ago, and we explained the labeling and what the labeling means on egg cartons. And so cage-free basically means that if you buy free-range basically means that they're still in this big
warehouse. They're still in this, and they're cramped, shoved in there. Big, huge, long, cramped warehouse / commercial hen house. And they have access to the outdoors. So if there's 17,000 chickens, normally it's much more than that, but we'll just say 17,000 chickens in this warehouse. At the very end of that warehouse, there is a small door about the size of a laptop, a doggy door, if you will. If the chicken chooses to go out that door onto a concrete pad that is fenced in with chain link fence, then great. That is now considered legally, labeling-wise, a free-range chicken. So out of those 17,000 chickens, how many are actually going to choose to go outside that door and stand on that concrete pad in the hot sun? Maybe none, but they can still be labeled on that label, free-range. So just, you know, someone had posted that, wanted to explain that to everybody. The next one I had posted this morning was about smart chickens. And it was a study, and we all know studies are, you know, a dime a dozen. You have to research who did the study, how it was done. We all understand that. We're smart. And just like when you hear that little comment, orange juice has been proven to reduce certain types of cancer. Study paid for by Minute Maid. You know, just typical. Typical. Okay. So this came to us, I think, from over across the pond in the UK. And the headline was, chickens cleverer than toddlers. Is cleverer a word? First off, if they did the study and scientists are using the word cleverer, is that a word? I don't even know. I guess I have no clue. Or is it should be more clever? Chickens are more clever than toddlers? Or is, anyway, chickens cleverer than toddlers, according to a new study. Could the humble hen really be brighter than your toddler? And I posted, it was a very vague post, and so what I did, a little bit more research this morning, and I found a post that described the study, or what the study really showed, if you will, also in the comment section below the initial link. You can scroll down and look at that. I'll open it up here and kind of give you an idea of what the study showed, according to this scientist's interpretation, as soon as it pops up here on the old laptop here. Come on. Here we go. Okay. It is easy to dismiss them as bird brains, but chickens may be cleverer than toddlers. Studies show that chicks can master skills including numeracy and self-control and even basic structural engineering. Typically, it takes children until the age of 4 to accomplish some of these feats. Christine Nicole, the Bristol University professor of animal welfare, who reviewed 20 years of research on the topic, said it was wrong to think of chickens as being stupid. Instead, the birds have many hidden depths. Chickens exhibit intelligent behavior within just a few hours of hatching, she says. Newly born chicks are able to keep track of numbers up to 5. Okay. Yes. And I'm trying to find a study I posted or I shared on this radio show when we first started this show over 5 years ago, over 800 episodes. There was a study that came out. I'm trying to find it and pull it back up and post it that talks about young chicks being able to count better than a preschooler. So I'll try to find that and post it later. It was a more in-depth study apparently than this one. But newborn chicks are able to keep track of numbers up to 5. When given a choice between two groups of plastic eggs, they almost invariably choose the bigger one, even when the decision was between 2 eggs or 3 eggs. They choose the bigger one. They even choose the larger number after researchers tried to trick them by moving eggs from one group to the other. In her review paper, The Intelligent Hen, Professor Nicole said the bird seemed to be born with an understanding of physics, particularly structural engineering. This is demonstrated by experiments in which newly hatched chicks were shown 2 diagrams of a cube, only one of which was accurate. The chick showed more interest in the accurate diagram. Experiments show that young chicks understand that an object that moves out of sight still exists. In contrast, it takes babies until around a year old to grasp the concept that out of sight does not necessarily mean out of mind. That's interesting. So if you move an egg behind the waterer or something, the chicks still know it's there. It's just behind the waterer. Chickens also exhibit self-control in experiments. If you've ever given your chickens happy hen treats, I don't know if you've ever seen self-control with your chickens. Or mealworms. But chickens also exhibit self-control in experiments. For instance, they quickly learned that if they waited longer to start eating food, they would be allowed access to it for longer. Interesting. In one study, 93% of the hens showed self-control in this way. Children typically wouldn't show this until they turn 4. Professor Nicole, whose review was commissioned by free-range egg firm, the Happy Hen Company, stated that chickens have the capacity to master skills and develop abilities that human child can take months and even years to accomplish. So this has been a lot of comments spurred on our Facebook page from from this. Everything from they must be so smart because we are still asking, why did the chicken cross the road? Somebody put, sarcastically, I hope, chickens are probably smarter than most adults that I know. Says, I love this one. This one's so cute, so clever. My hens are pretty darn smart. I had a chicken actually lie to me once. When I came out back to feed her one morning, she was hiding because she knew I would be upset about her having pecked up all of my tomato plants that I was silly enough to plant the day before. I love that. The hen had pecked all of her tomato plants, and she knew she had done wrong, so she was hiding when she came out to give her some feed. I'm not coming out. I know I'm in trouble. Let's see. One person said, not my chickens. I've got tools in the shed that are smarter than my chickens. let's see. Here's one. Someone had put, not on your life is a chicken smarter than my 2-year-old. Chickens have limited intelligence, and most of that is nothing more than survival instincts. And let's see what else we said. I need a bumper sticker. Maybe we can capitalize on this here at Chicken Whisperer, Inc. I need a bumper sticker that says, my chicken is smarter than your preschooler. There's a hint. Oh, me. Let's see. We have a reality TV show at my house. It's titled, Who's Smarter Than a Chicken? Currently, the chickens are winning by 1 point. For a while, they were a few points ahead. At least, I'm catching up. That's awesome. Let's see. Here's one. This is the last one I'll share with you. You can go see them at my Facebook page. Honest to goodness, I really believe this. When my chicks used to venture out of my yard into the neighbor's yard, I got their tail feathers with the little spanking switch. Now, if they do venture out of the yard, all I have to do is grab that switch and start walking towards them, and they turn around and come right back into my yard. They know when I grab that switch. It says, even when their tail feathers are just tapped with that switch, they act like a fox has gotten them. People don't believe me about my trained hens until they actually see it. Gotta love it. And then, of course, this one's funny. My chickens are much smarter than the guy next door, but then again, so is a hammer. So you can see all of those posts over at our fan page at Chicken Whisperer. You can just find us at chickenwhisperer.com and click the link over to our Facebook page. Or, of course, you can go to facebook.com. Again, that's facebook.com/ The Chicken Whisperer. So I thought that was quite entertaining. Regarding our chickens in the news segment. So no worries at all. Let's go ahead and head over here to our switchboard. We've got Prepper Penny that has called in, and she's going to be teaching us all about getting started with canning.
I need to get my Chicken Whisperer notebook out, start taking notes, because I need to know. And you know, I did some research this morning. Do you know the difference between a pressure cooker and a pressure canner? There is a difference. And I've got a really great PDF document here that talks about the difference that I'm going to try to post in the chat room. So let's go ahead and go over to the phone lines, and let's give Prepper Penny a big Chicken Whisperer welcome. Prepper Penny, welcome
Yay.
Back to the show.
It's so good to be back, Andy. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing pretty good. And it's another day here on the homestead and looking more towards what I have to do with this garden. Things are starting to come in. You got cucumbers and squash coming in, a few tomatoes. And when we get back from this CW tour with Tractor Supply, I think we're going to have beans and peas literally coming out of our ears. So we're going to have to act on this very quickly. We're either going to have to make that executive decision to just blanch and freeze again, or if we're going to, in fact, I've already plugged in our second freezer that's actually in the hallway here. The other one we used last year is full from last year's goodies, and I've already plugged in the second one to start, be prepared anyway. And so, you know, when I did that, I was thinking, you know, if I just would learn to can and get over my fear of canning and pop for the equipment to can, then my power bill would go down because I wouldn't have two chest freezers running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Well, and not only that, you know, you've got one freezer full. What happens if you're out of electricity for a week or more?
Very true.
You're in a lot of trouble.
I'm going to be eating a heck of a lot of veggies that week.
You're going to have a big neighborhood party. Yes, you will. Yeah. No, I look at electricity as a luxury that we have now that may not be available down the road sometime. And that's the whole approach in how I preserve the food, that whether I buy it at a grocery store, the butcher, or the farmer's market, I don't want to lose it. You know, it's an investment. Even this that I grow out back, you know, there's a lot of labor and love in it. And I don't want to risk it being lost to the whims of electricity, you know. So there's very little that I have in my freezer. I do keep things there, but certainly enough that I could easily go through, you know, within a week. I don't trust it. Just call me paranoid. Call me a prepper. I just don't trust it.
Well, I've also got to, I've got to defrost. In fact, we've talked about the proper freezers for storage, and these side-by-sides or these typical homeowner freezers are defrost. They automatically defrost, and so it really is not the prop. If you really want a deep freeze, you get one that is manual defrost. Your food it will last longer, it will preserve longer. You're not going to have all those crystals inside, because the freezer has to actually heat up to eliminate those crystals in there, my understanding. And so we have three chest freezers. One's still unplugged. I just unplugged the second one, and the third one is full from last year. But they are manual defrost, so I have to defrost this one and transfer, because it now has about 3 inches of ice all the way through it, and so I need to do that. But again, my understanding, when we've had the folks on talking about that, if you're looking for an upright or a chest that is for, again, long-term, you know, deep freeze type of stuff, you want to try to get one. It would be better to get one for the quality of your food, to get one that is not auto defrost, that you manual defrost, just the way it works. It doesn't have apparently the thing in there that heats it up to keep it defrosted, and that causes a lot of bad food and freezer burn and stuff like that. So, when I plugged that freezer in, I was like, you know, if we were canning, I would not have to worry about my power bill, or like you said, you know, the power going out, or, you know, the time it takes. If, you know, if I'm getting ready to cook and I'm like, oh man, I don't have any veggies out, you know, instead of opening a can, I've got to go to the freezer. And a lot of those were just blanched. So like your green beans and your peas down here in the South, we like to cook it till it's mush anyway. So, you know, it's,
It's like, you know, great, now I've got to spend an hour or longer cooking these green beans or these butter beans, these black-eyed peas, until they're fit to eat, according to us Southerners. And so I'm like, great. So at least if it was, you know, canned, apparently I don't have to deal with thaw. I don't have to deal with, you know, cooking. So anyway, so we're looking forward to, you know, again, newbies, the green folks. We won't get into advanced canning on this show. Maybe that'll be saved for a second one. But just exactly for me, this folks that, you know, maybe they have a first-time garden. Maybe they've got the garden and they're wanting to step into canning. I am going to get online and start searching today, or I'm going to the local Sears or the local kitchen store. And what do I need to start? I think that's kind of what you wanted to cover today, a little bit about canning, the basics, but most importantly, what do I need?
Well, you know, there are a couple of methods in canning. You have both pressure canning, and then you have water bath canning. And your jams and jellies and stuff, even green beans, are canned in a water bath canner. And that's really not a lot of special equipment that you need to have, just a great big pot and usually a basket to be able to lift them out.
Right.
But the pressure canner is you can't do anything but buy a pressure canner. You can't replace it with something else that you've got in the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I wanted to bring up a couple of points today that I think are really valuable for newbies to consider when they're looking to get into canning. And that is, there are a couple of websites. One is called FreeCycle, FreeCycle.org. And in that place, you can post that you're looking for canning supplies. Everything that people post that they want or post that they want to get rid of are free. It is a free exchange of, you know, whatever you may want. I wanted to start playing with some aquaponics, so I put an ad out, you know, just put a posting on it that I wanted a large fish aquarium. And within 2 hours, I had one offered to me. And you can do that with canning supplies. Just put posts out there that you're looking for canning supplies. Also, a lot of Facebook pages have, the local communities have Facebook pages where it's kind of an online garage sale. And I would just look for, you know, on Facebook for, you know, your local community pages. And you'll find a lot of really good prices on things through that as well. And just if you're a garage saler, flea market hound like I am, you're going to find a lot of odd and end type things, canning jars, maybe a pressure canner, water bath canners, and things like that, that, you know, you don't have to have a large startup cost as long as you're looking for it, you know, in the right season, and we just happen to be in the right season for that.
Yeah, the would there be any a lot of people will go and buy cast iron. It may be rusty, and there's a process to actually bring a cast iron pot that looks horrid back to new condition. It's cast iron, a little elbow grease and whatnot, elbow work. But would there be something that would make my decision, if I'm looking for a pressure canner out there that may be used at the garage sale, something I need to be wary of?
Well, All American Canners is a brand name, and those are the best canners in the world because those things have been handed down from generation to generation. They don't have really any parts that can go bad on them. So if you come across an American canner, you want to grab that thing. They're not real abundant out there at garage sellers, let me tell you. But the other canners, they have a rubber ring inside the lid, and that is removable because you have to take it out to clean it, and you want to check that. But even having said that, say you find one that, you know, for a really good price, but it's got a cracked dry rot or anything like that on that metal ring, the manufacturer, you can almost always buy a replacement ring and replacement heart valves and things like that. So you want to do a little bit of research now before you get out there to understand what the elements are of any pressure canner. You've got your, you know, the canner, the lid, the rubber ring. You have the valve that releases the air, and then you've got your pressure gauge. And that's basically the elements of a pressure cooker, or pressure canner, excuse me. And so you want to kind of know what those are. The major brands that are out there, you'll be able to find replacement parts for them. So just getting an idea, doing a little bit of Google research, and you'll be ready to go and be out there looking for it. But I always post that I'm looking for canning supplies, and I've gotten some freezer canning supplies given to me. But it's you know, there are a lot of ways you can do it, but you don't want to skimp on, you know, the safety of the issues like canning jars. You always want to make sure to, for example, rub your finger around the top lip of it to make sure there are no cracks. You want to do a visual inspection to make sure there are no, even the most tiny hairline cracks will make it fail in a pressure canner. So, but there are a lot of these things out at garage sales and yard sales, so you might just want to be looking for them.
And isn't there a gauge that kind of sticks out of the top to get the is that a pressure canner?
That is in the pressure canner, yeah, that's your gauge. Actually, I have a Presto, a smaller Presto that I use that does not have a gauge. It's got a weight that is either 5, 10, or 15 pounds, and it's just a matter of how many rings, weight rings I put on that, what would you call that thing that you put on the top of it? I don't know, it covers the hole to build up the pressure in the canner.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
But now some of them do have actual pressure gauges that'll show you the amount of pressure, but mine actually doesn't have one. My American canner does, but the other one doesn't, so it depends on what kind you get. Presto didn't.
When we go out to start looking for these, Presto, probably one of the big popular brands I'm seeing in the chat room and whatnot, because I know it doesn't always apply, but when we're talking about pressure canners, maybe this is twofold, is bigger better, number two, or is it going to be and dig up being, hey, maybe buy the biggest you can afford at the time, because I know they can get kind of expensive, $200-$300,
mm-hmm.
and or is bigger better? And I guess it just – and maybe that depends on other things, like if you plan to have quart jars or bigger jars or smaller, how many jars you want to do, or can you stack if you have small jars? Can you stack them and do a bottom row and a top row in this huge mammoth pressure canner? Does size matter?
Well, size does matter. That's why I have two canners. The first one I got was when I was first learning and getting into it, is just a standard size that you would see, and I bought mine at Walmart. I think it was about $70. And it's just a standard size, holds probably 7 quarts or more pints. But the second one I bought was last fall. I bought the American canner. It's the 930 series, and it is a double decker, so I can get twice as much canning done, in the same amount of time. And last year I was almost dead on my feet trying to keep up with the canning, so my dear husband showed mercy and got me the big one. But I use them both. But I use them both when it's in season and I'm doing a whole lot of canning, especially when I'm doing multiple quarts. Then I use the double decker just to save me time. An example of that is I buy stuff from Zakon Foods. I don't know if you all know what the Zakon is, but it's a really good fresh food distributor that you go get it out of a truck. I know it sounds kind of hinky, but it's really legitimate. And I bought 80 pounds of chicken a few months ago, and that's when I got my big pressure canner out to get that stuff all canned up. So if I have just some some tomatoes out of the garden, not in quite that big of a lot, I'll just use the regular canner and get the same result. So it just depends on what your goals are and how serious you are into it. I would always suggest that somebody just start with a standard size that would hold 7 quarts. I think that would be a good thing, and you don't want to make a huge investment in it. At the get-go, and you don't need to. Mine has worked fine, and it's an inexpensive one. It works fine, just like the really expensive one that I've got. They just, you know, they do.
The okay, so obviously we'll be heading out and looking for a pressure canner, and I guess like you stated, size does matter. Our budget tube, the largest that we
budget
can buy, double decker, again, save you some time in the long run. Time is money, so again, I think maybe the largest unit that you can afford at the time. So we've got
mm-hmm.
that. Of course, we will need a buku amount of mason jars, which a lot
you
of
do.
Discount stores now carry. Yes, you talked about, you know, free cycle and garage sales and things like that, but I know that I've seen some really fabulous deals at places, discount stores like Fred's, Dollar General, the ever
mm-hmm.
so hated Walmart, places like that, and
mm-hmm.
Don't discount your local mom and pop stores.
Well,
but,
I'm not advocating
so you can get,
not Walmart. I understand
exactly.
the whole Walmart thing.
So, but tons of places, like I said, I would say the majority of our listeners shop at Walmart, even though they may hate it. But so you got the jars that we'll need, of course, with the lids, things like that. But what are some of the other equipment? I know that we popped for, I think when we were doing our jellies and jams, this pincher long kind of tongs that we can reach down into that when we did the hot bath for our jellies or whatever you called it. We got that. I guess there's a, if you get a big enough pressure canner, I guess you need the basket to pull those jars out of the pressure canner. So we've got two items there, the tongs, jars, the basket, I guess, if you will, that it sits in that you can pull out once they're done. What are some other wonderful things we need?
Well, the basket is only necessary. You would only use that in a water bath canner. The pressure
okay.
canner, you wouldn't use a basket in, but you do need the grabber to be able
okay.
to get your cans out of there safely. You also
All right.
need your lids and rings. And there are a couple of options on your lids and rings. Your lids can only be used one time, and then you have to throw them out. And the reason is because there is a wax seal that when you can it, it melts, conforms to create your seal, and once that's popped, you're never going to get it back again. You don't ever want to risk that. They are not worth, you know, they're not that expensive, so you never ever want to use
right,
one twice.
Right.
Having said that, I do use mine when I do dry freeze-dried meals in a jar and use a vacuum seal on it, but there is no, you know, but there is no reusing it when you're doing either pressure or water bath canning. Now, the options
The lids, you say we should only use one time?
Yes.
Like if I go and you buy the jars and they already have the lids on them and
correct,
we use that
correct.
Once, and I, let's say I pop it open, and I use those green beans,
yes.
I clean that jar and set it aside. For the next time I'm ready to can, it would be best for me to go out and buy new lids for this jar, not to
yeah.
reuse. Okay.
That's absolutely right. Now, the ring that you screw down on top of it that goes
right.
on the thread at the top, that those can be used over and over again when
okay.
they start showing some wear or, you know, if they get bent, then I get rid of them. But they last
a little
for
rusty.
A really long time. But there are a couple of reusable lids. One is Tatler. I saw somebody say that they love Tatler. I do, too. And there is Forever Reusable Lids that is also just a similar product, but the lids themselves, the ring, that rubber ring on it is separate from the lid, so you get to reuse that over and over and over again. And they are more expensive than buying the disposable lids, but I like to have things that I don't have to replace. So I've invested in the Tatler and Forever reusable lids and still keep all those rings that I have. And I mean, I have hundreds of rings, but it'll take me a long time to ever
right.
have to replace those. But if you're going to do it long-term and devotedly like I am, you're going to want to invest in that.
Talking about investing, someone had posted a link to an Amazon product in the chat room. I went to it, and it was like a little kit that comes with
mm-hmm.
the tongs and some pinchers and things like that that you might need. It was like $10-$12. I'm looking at another one here, function canning kit for $15 with the tongs and the can lifter and all kinds of stuff, timer. But I'm also looking at canners now, and just giving an example of the price difference here. I'm looking right now at a Presto brand 23-quart pressure canner, and it's $79. Right next to it is a 21-quart, so actually smaller, 21-quart pressure canner. It's made by All American, and it's $200. So we've got actually, we'll just say for the most part, two pressure canners ranging from $79 to $200, and actually the one for $200 is actually a little bit smaller. If we look at when we look at that price, one would think, wow, that one should be so much better. Why, I have no idea. But then we're looking at, say, a 30-quart. And it's $280. So we're looking at about $300 for that 30-quart pressure cooker. Here, holy cow! Here's a 41-quart. I guess that's the Mac Daddy here. I don't see one actually larger.
Is that an American canner?
Yeah, the All American canner, 41.5-quart pressure canner, $409. And let me just click on it. I want to see how many jars that would actually do. 32 pints.
That's the key. The 23-quart versus the 21-quart that you just mentioned at the onset of this, it doesn't matter really that 2-quart difference, because it's not like you're going to get two more quart jars in there. It may be a little bit taller to give it that volume, but you're still going to probably get the same amount of jars in it.
This says it holds 32. Well, the Big Mac Daddy 41.5-quart pressure cooker by All American for $410. it holds 32 pint jars or 19 quart jars. And so, again, me not being good visual memory when I'm walking through Fred's discount store. The average jar you put on the shelf with green beans or squash or pickles or tomatoes in it, is that a quart jar?
It is.
That's the popular size that are most for your veggies and pickles and things like that. So 19, you could do 19 at a time. Now let me ask you this. Two questions that are on my mind. One, the time frame, the process. I go out to the garden today and I pick a mess of fresh snap beans, good old Blue Lake green beans, or whatever I've got out planted. I bring them in. Let me know the process, the time frame of now. Obviously, I'll have to wash those green beans, and then some people may not snap them, but I'm snapping them. And then I guess what's the process here? And when I put those green beans in the jar, how far do I fold the green beans up? And then do I have to put sterile water in there, bottled water in there? Can I just put my well water or water out of the faucet in there to fill it up? How far do I fill it up before I screw that lid on and actually put it in the pressure canner? Walk us through the steps of from the time I pick these green beans out of my garden until I'm ready to set them on the shelf.
What I do is I'll bring them home, and then I incorporate everybody to help me prepare the fruit or vegetable, whatever it may be. And I do it right away. I don't let my produce sit around even for a day, because you're just losing some of the nutrients, because as soon as you pick it, the nutritional value starts going down. So I prepare it with the beans. I do a lot of pickled green beans. Just a canned green beans, I do like you. I snap them. They're in usually about 1-inch lengths. You're gonna fill your canner to within a half an inch of the top rim. Now, depending on what you're canning, though, I can't stress this enough. You need to the Bible of all canning books is called the Ball Complete Book of Home of Canning, and it will explain exactly every recipe for everything that you're going to can, and I have to always refer to it. Maybe the people that have been doing this a lot longer than me know some of these things by heart, but I never trust my memory, and I want to do it in the safest way possible.
When it comes to botulism, I'm not going to trust my memory either.
Exactly. Well, you know what? Exactly. You don't want any kind of failures, so you want to be able, you want to be able to be confident when you put it up that you have followed all of these really researched tried and true ways of getting it done. And so with the green beans, for example, I just put water in it. I'm on a septic system, and I just use my tap water is what I use in mine, and fill it to within that half inch, clean my rims, put my lids on it, then the ring, and then I water bath can them right off the top of my head, around 90 minutes, something like that. No, not that long in a water bath. But you can't do canning without having a reference. And I can't stress enough that this Ball Complete book is the best one to have. So when you're getting started, that is the one investment that you need to make, and you'll follow that recipe, and you'll refer to this book. My Poor Dog-Eared book is just a mess. But you have to follow the instructions. And I don't think any one person can remember confidently, all of the variables, because some things need to be within a half an inch, some things need to be within an inch, and it's all going to depend on expansion. Some things need to be water bath canned, some things need to be pressure canned, and the difference there is their acidity level.
Green beans, you said that it was perfectly acceptable to do just the water bath canning like we do our jellies and jams.
Yes, you can. Green beans can. The tomatoes are pressure canned. So, it just depends on their acidity levels. Fruits like strawberries are water bath canned. So, it's hard to keep it all straight. And then, pickled green beans, I think I have to pressure can those. I'm not 100% sure. But jellies and things like that are pretty safe as water bath canning. Things like meat, I have to pressure can my meat. And another thing about the whole freezer conversation that we had, I'm getting ready now to make up some of my meatloaf, a big batch of meatloaf, that I'm going to can. I'm going to can it, and that way when I'm short on time, all I have to do is pop that lid, microwave it, heat it up, and I've got a home-cooked meal. So there's just so much versatility you can do in preparing home meals through the canning process, and it's not just it's not just fruits and vegetables. It's meals. It's meats. It's a lot of things that you can do. And again, I try to steer away as much as I can from relying on my freezer. And I do not even have a dedicated freezer. I've got a side by side, and what'll fit in the freezer on that refrigerator freezer combo, that's all I keep in my refrigerator because I just don't want to lose the investment. And as far as that jar lifter and the utensils that you need for canning, there are a few things that you absolutely have to have. Other things, not so much. That lifter, you absolutely cannot scrimp on that. Don't use tongs from your kitchen drawer. You're just risking some injury by doing that if you drop one of those things. That stuff comes out of there beyond boiling hot. And so that grabber that grabs the tops of those pans, you want to use that. Your funnel is another one. And the only other one I can think of is the little magnet so that you're not having to put your hand in that hot water to get your lids out. But those are the only things that I use.
So you're basically sterilizing first before you do any of the canning, having those lids, the jars, everything, that's a whole step. And then, again, using the funnel to fill it up with, say, the green beans and the water you're filling it up with, and it'll tell you in that book how far up based on what you're canning. And then the magnet to set that lid on it and seal it. And then, again, once that's done, you drop it back into a pressure canner, and that's when you actually go to can it to build up pressure to seal those the lids to it. Now, someone asked in the chat room, I've been meaning to ask about, they mentioned about buying cheap jars or cheaper jars, no-name jars or not-so-popular name-brand jars, and having friends have those explode on them. So have you, in your years of canning, is that a common thing? Am I doing something wrong if I have a can explode in the – and I guess it would explode in the pressure canner, or is it going to explode on my counter and make a complete mess because it's cooling down too fast or something? And what are the chances and what causes that?
Well,
can
I've
to
had
explode?
Only, yeah, I've only had a couple of cans – that broke on me like that, a couple of failures, I call it. And that those are things that sometimes just happen. They just do. I happen to buy only Mason or Ball jars. I've never bought an off brand, and I don't know why. I just happen to have all these Ball jars. And so I don't know. I can't really say for sure about those and their the quality, but you're gonna have a certain percentage of failures in whatever you do, and that could be the most minute hairline fracture in that jar, or just the manufacturing, you know, may have a thin spot in it, and then you're going to get the failure. But that is going to happen under the pressure of the canner itself. I've never had one that has failed and broken after I've taken it out. Not to say that it can't happen; it's just that I haven't experienced that.
Yeah, that, I guess, is another thing. Not necessarily on the fear factor. Well, the other fear factor is having this thing explode in my kitchen. So I guess my biggest issue is the botulism. And then, like I said, it really, out of everything that anybody's ever told me, the most thing that made me feel most comfortable was the woman that said, growing up, it was as simple as I was taught that when I open it, I've already said this, that we hear a swish or that pop. Otherwise, we did not use it. And as a young child, a young girl, that was part of my job. I had to make sure. Mom always emphasized that. So that being that simple makes me feel better. The other thing is the fact that this thing exploding, but I'm guessing that's why they have that, just like gas tanks and other pressure tanks like propane have that little release valve, that I'm guessing that if I do something completely crazy, something happens, that release valve will hopefully do its job and I don't have shrapnel flying through my farmhouse.
Right. Well, you know, and I grew up being really afraid of canners. They were really loud when my grandmother did it, and they always made sure that us kids knew that this thing could blow up, don't come in the kitchen. Well, for heaven's sake, you know, when I grew up, it's like, I'm not going to go around one of those. But it's really not that bad anymore, and there are a lot more safety features on canners today just because of some of the explosions that happened to our grandparents. And but, yeah, you've got safety valves that are, you know, a plug that will pop and release all the pressure before that thing will ever explode. So you could be really safe, you know, confident that that's not going to happen to you. But you know, when you're canning something, especially pressure canning, I don't leave the kitchen. That is where my focus is, because everything is so important and it has to go exactly right. So you have to be there to listen to what your canner is doing, making sure that you're not hearing any, you know, jars exploding in there or anything like that. But you have to, you know, I have a gas stove, so I'm always adjusting the size of the flame just to keep my pressure exactly where it's supposed to be. You don't want to, you can't put something in your pressure canner and, you know, go out back and work in the chicken coop. You have to stay there and oversee it and monitor it. So it's so worth it, and once you get into it, it's so enjoyable that it's not even like work, and the rewards, you're just so proud every time you pop one of those lids and you get that swoosh on it. I've had a couple, when I first started canning, I was doing things like gumbos and different soups like that with rice in it, and I hadn't taken into consideration the expansion of the rice, and had a lot of failures, you know, lids popping off and stuff because of that. So you're going to have some trial and error. Some things are going to go really well. Some things, you know, as you get braver and start expanding, then you're going to have more accidents. But that's okay because you're more comfortable with it and you learn by those mistakes. But I love my canning, and I will actually go to the grocery store to buy things just so that I can can them, because I start having my own withdrawals. Something might be getting low in my cabinet, and for example, peaches my neighbor ran out of peaches that I had canned last summer, and we just pulled out a bunch of them. And boy, there's nothing like getting those. You know, they are so good. They are so good, and knowing that you put them together yourself, and you know every ingredient in it.
Right. Now, we don't have any fruit trees producing yet, but we are in South Georgia, which is, I know, not any longer the peach capital of the world. I get that. There's South Carolina and California, but we are still considered the peach state. And the fact the county we live in is famous for the development of the Alberta peach and the refrigerated rail car, so peach farmers could get their peaches further out when selling them. So a lot of history in this county. We produce more milk out of this county than any other county in the state. But that said, I wanted to share. So we're looking, in fact, Jen's like, when is Brown's Market going to open? Right down the street here, huge farm and famous for their peaches. People come from states around. But my next question is, my understanding, just from reading this on Amazon, looking at some of these pressure canners today, is that also more bang for your buck, it appears. Now, please correct me if I'm wrong, including in the chat room, because I am not the canning whisperer, I guarantee you that. It looks that you can use a pressure canner also like a pressure cooker, but not the opposite. Pressure cooker, you're not going to can in there, but if I buy a pressure canner, I'm getting two items for the price of one, because I can do pressure cooking in there if I'm going to put a roast in there, or maybe I get those frozen green beans out and I want them done in 10 minutes instead of an hour in 10 minutes. I could use this as a pressure cooker as well.
I love cooking cooking meals in my pressure canner. And yeah, I do that a lot too. I don't have a pressure cooker, you know, like those electric things, because they wouldn't serve my purpose. But yeah, you're right. I do a lot of my meals in my pressure canner, and it's so good. The flavor infuses so much better in those than anything else. And yeah, you're done lickety-split from frozen to the table in, you know, within an hour rather than four or five. So you're absolutely right on that. But, you know, there are a lot of other methods for preserving food than canning. And I just want
dehydration with the dehydrator and freezing and absolutely.
Curing, smoking, fermenting, you know, there are a lot of ways to preserve foods. And, you know, when I knew I was coming on here today, I went and started doing some searching because I was thinking about my garden and all the things that I'm going to be canning. And it occurred to me that the one thing that you can't can or preserve, dry, pickle, or anything, is lettuce. And I think lettuce is the only thing that we cannot preserve into some more long-term food storage. So that's pretty interesting, don't you think? Of all the things on the face of this earth, and that's the only thing we cannot preserve because it's just too watery. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. So, I've never done it. I do smoke things. I'm just starting to get into fermenting a little bit, and I love pickling. So, bear in mind that you don't have to jump right into canning, that there are other, ways to preserve food. And, I'm just probably as addicted to dehydrating my food as canning it. It's a lot of fun.
I just wanted to make this comment too, I guess is related based on the quality of water you're going to use to fill up your jars before you can them with your food. And Bob was talking about different water filters and things, and being OCD, it doesn't matter what I'm purchasing for the most part. I will research it into the ground just because I don't want to the day after say, oh, maybe I shouldn't, or I didn't get a good deal, or, oh, maybe I like this one better. So Jen gets angry sometimes because I'll research it to death. But filters, we have a Berkey. A lot of people are familiar with the Berkey. There's a couple of different types. And so Bob was talking about filters. Some other folks in the chat room have the Berkey water filters, and we've had ours now for about, maybe 4 to 5 years, and we love it. We even take it in the RV when we go because we don't know the quality of water we're going to have. Even now, if we have to drink a bottled water, it's still like, oh gosh, you can definitely tell the difference. And I just wanted to emphasize to Bob when he starts looking, and the Directive 21 site is good. That's where we got ours with the Berkey guy. And I think we ordered the We got a Berkey, and then we bought a Berkey, and then it came with the filters, and then we got two of the travel Berkeys, sport Berkeys for free because anyway. So he's got some good deals there. But we also every time we do, we buy both the black Berkey filters there's a learning curve there. You might see that you can have two black Berkey filters or four black Berkey filters. If you have two or four, you could even have one, really. It does not matter except for the fact of how fast and how much water you filter. So, like for our unit, it holds about 2.5 gallons, and we have two in the top. It's all gravity flow. In the top, we just have two black Berkey filters up there. If we had four, it wouldn't mean the water was any cleaner or better. It just means that it would produce more clean water faster because you've got four filters doing the work instead of two. That's all that means. So, ours that we have has the two black Berkey filters. That is ample and fast enough for our family of now four. No problems there. And then we also have the PDF filters, I believe it's called, in the bottom. Once it comes through, gravity-fed through the black Berkey filters in the top part of the filter, it runs through the bottom PDF filters, I believe it's called, in the bottom. And the black Berkey or the Mac Daddy, they're the ones that actually turn stagnant pond water into clean, fresh drinking water, and those are the Mac Daddy ones. Now, the bottom ones that are optional that you can screw into the bottom, but the water still would be gravity-fed through the PDF, that's going to eliminate your chlorine, your heavy metals, a lot of the arsenic and fluoride and things like that out of the water as well. And so I just wanted to let him know that when he's looking at those, what that four isn't necessarily better than two as far as the quality of water, just it would produce faster water for you. And then the PDF, I think they're called underneath, which filters out that chlorine and the fluoride and the heavy metals and the arsenics and things like that out of the water, that the black Berkey filters would make it completely safe to drink, but it just may not take out the heavy metals. So that's what we use those for. So there's now also, unlike these pure filters that you can get at the Home Depot and Lowe's that you have on a pitcher or on your sink, which again, in my opinion, not being the water whisperer by any means, which are really just junk, this thing, because people think, oh, then I got to buy filters all the dang time. I know that the black Berkey filters, if you go to their website and do the research, even from the manufacturer, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's 6,000 gallons. I thought for a while it was 3,000, but I think it may be 6,000, or maybe it's 3,000. Anyway, it's thousands and thousands of gallons. And I'm sorry, I can't remember. I'll look it up every now and then when I want to know. But so for example, you can get two black Berkey filters, I think, for it's about $100. And then you're thinking, oh my gosh, $100. But when you think about this filter producing, ours holds about 2.5 gallons. How long you're going to be able to use that? Because it's I want to say it's either yes, okay. So Bob just read it. It's 6,000 gallons that these filters are good for. Now let me make a comment that may not be in the website. When we moved here to the homestead. We have city water, but that city water is well water. So the city has several wells. It's a small little town, 1 mile square, population 500. So it is well water that then they pump and then I guess treat and then we so we're drinking well water, but it's heavy in iron. It is horribly heavy in iron. So I don't necessarily have a worry about taking a shower in it, even though we've got the PDF, the shower filter that eliminates a lot of that chlorine, bleach, and stuff that we're putting all over our body. But the Berkey takes care of that. But I will tell you, my point here, Bob, is that about twice a year, probably about twice a year, even though I know I haven't gone through 6,000 gallons, I will actually just break down my Berkey, clean it out really good, including the spigot, and I will notice on those black Berkey filters on the top a film, especially since now we're in an area that has super, super high iron. And so it'll have this kind of orangey coating to it. And so all I do is I just take those black Berkeys out, hold it under the water. I can get a toothbrush that I can then throw away from the dollar store, and I'll just clean those filters with my toothbrush, maybe as needed. You can see right through it to see when it starts to have that buildup of all the stuff it's filtering out, and it's very simple. It's still good for 6,000 gallons, but I'll take them out, you know, twice a year, maybe further if I see, and because now that we have all this iron and it builds up, take my toothbrush and just clean those filters really, really good, and then install them back in, and I'm good, because I try to monitor that with the 6,000 gallons, and it's amazing. So it's great. Well worth the money, in my opinion. We've had it for 4 to 5 years, probably closer to five, and they're well worth every penny. That's all the water we drink and cook with comes out of that, and we even take it in the RV when we're traveling. It is awesome. So that's the water I would use if we were going to be doing our canning, and gotta love it. So, but anywho, so again, we're talking a little bit more. You know what? We need to go to commercial break, and we come back. We can wrap up anything that's on your list and continue talking about canning. Getting started with canning, all the little tidbits of that we need, from a little magnet thing to seal the lids to the lids, and not you reusing the sealer, the lids, and all this great stuff about exploding, kind of getting over our fears. Let me rephrase that, getting over my fears of canning, and looking at them at Amazon and other places and how much they are, and it is bigger, really better. We've kind of answered that today, so stay tuned. There'll be a lot more coming up with Prepper Penny, talking about canning. So stay with us.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Presenting the Clapper. Let your appliances turn on and off just by clapping.
Clap on, clap off, clap on, clap off.
The Clapper.
Yes, you heard that right. It was a Clapper commercial, which could only mean one thing. We're getting much, much closer to Christmas. One more thing before I forget regarding the Berkey water filtration system is that before I bought it, I actually called the company. Now, Directive 21 is just a seller of it. I called Millennium Concepts, the manufacturer of the unit. And I asked them, I was curious, if I was at the beach and I got and I filled the Berkey up with salt water, would I then be able to drink it safely? And it would filter it to drinking water. The answer is no, and I think that's very important, especially if you live near the beach and you're looking at, oh my gosh, in an end of the world scenario, I've got plenty of water to drink. I buy this Berkey. That they say no. So I think that's very important to share with you in case you were thinking that if you got water from the beach, right out of the ocean, the Berkey would not help you as far as making that a viable source of drinking water. It will not do that. So just a tidbit of information from right from the mouth of the maker, manufacturer, and inventor of the Berkey. So I wanted to share that with you as well. So let's see. Gotta love that, Bob Peterson. I said, I'm having a paramedic lunch today, graham crackers and peanut butter from the ER. Bob, I think you know that I was a former paramedic, pulled about 7 or 8 years full-time paramedic on the bus. So how cool is that? So I wanted to let you know that. Let me go back over here and bring Prepper Penny back on, and we'll continue to talk about... Oh, by the way, let me forget. Let me tell you this. This just came across the email. Ideal Poultry, our very first sponsor ever, over 5 years ago, they've been supporting this radio show. Ideal Poultry out of Cameron, Texas, they have an emergency surprise special today only. This, again, is today only. The chicks must be shipped today. They've got straight runs for $1 each when you buy 25. Pullets are only $1.50 each when you buy 25. And this is until they actually have sold out. And let me see what it includes. Oh, goodness, it doesn't say right here, but a surprise special. I guess it's potluck. Anything that they have extra from today's paid shipments, you'll get in this box. So, but hey, a buck a piece. And you buy 25 chickens, $25. Now imagine how much food they could produce for your family or your friends. Hey, give somebody the gift that keeps on giving. Give them 25 chickens. It's only going to cost you $25 plus shipping. So that's at Ideal Poultry idealpoultry.com. Give them a call. $1 for straight runs and just $1.50 for sexed pullets when you buy 25. That is pretty cool. Let me give you the number now to order. This is just for today. Today only. Emergency surprise special. 1-800-243-3257. And when you hear the recording pick up, you want to choose option 2. So 1-800-243-3257. Choose option 2 when instructed to do so. This is not for online orders. You strictly have to call in for this. And even though this is on their website, and I got you, if you subscribe to their newsletter, yeah, I got this via email during the break. Would love for you to tell them that you heard about it on the Chicken Whisperer show. So gotta love it. I wanted to share that with you. Okay, Penny, are you there?
Whoops, yes, Penny? I'm here. I have the mute button on. Okay. I'm here.
Oh, no, that's fine. Yep, I didn't know if I had the mute button on either on the switchboard. So no worries there. So we can continue. We can wrap it up in the next 10 minutes, about 1:30 Eastern. If there's anything that you had on your outline for today that you thought it was important to share with people like me who are thinking, you know, I really want to do this. I may just have to jump off the fence and go and do this weekend and get everything I need and just go for it. Anything else for the beginner you'd like to share? And
well,
not only that, when you're done, I want you to share with all of us, because Bob and people in the chat room are already impressed with your site. But once you wrap up anything you specifically want to talk to us as the beginner about canning, definitely tell us about the blog, the website, your Facebook page, your Twitter account. And I believe you're a sales rep for Thrive. If people are interested in, again, long-term storage food, they can look at all that. You may have specials you want to talk about that Thrive's offering right now through you as a distributor. So I definitely want to do that. So let's wrap up anything you wanted to talk about canning for us newbies, and then talk about you.
Well, gee, thanks. Yeah, you know, about the canning thing. You know, canning to me, and I appreciate everybody going to my page and my blog very much. I do appreciate that, and hopefully you'll understand that. You know, I'm just sharing my journey as I'm learning all of these things, and I am not this generational, you know, where I grew up on a farm and doing all this stuff. I'm just learning. I am a committed prepper. I have been for about 5 years, and you know, I've just evolved into where I am now. And you know, I just, you know, starting out as a prepper, food preservation and long-term food storage was so important to me. But as I've grown into this, I've become a suburban homesteader, you know, having backyard chickens, my gardens, my water collection systems and things like that. And, you know, I want everyone to know that I'm not professing to be an expert on everything. It's just that I like to share the evolution that I'm making and the journey that I'm going through to become, you know, the self-reliant person that I desire to be. And the advantages go so far beyond what I originally started out with as being a prepper. It is just a feasible lifestyle to have. There is such a health benefit to canning your own foods. Even if you don't grow it yet, going to a farmer's market or your local farm stands and supporting your local farmers, That is a way of getting started with all this. And once you start canning, which is what I did, I was buying produce from the farmers markets and basically had a flower garden. You know, once I started canning and realizing the benefits and realizing how much nicer it would be just to have it right out my back door, you know, then I started growing and I'm still learning, you know, my gardening skills. I'm still developing those, but everybody has to start somewhere, and it is just one step at a time. The benefits are so incredibly enormous that I just cannot advocate enough that even in, you know, whether you believe in being a prepper for the purpose of, you know, bad things happening in the world, which I'm convinced they are, but let's say that somebody in your house becomes ill, loses a job, you know, any number of things can happen. Having your food and being able to prepare your own food and all the commercial products that you buy, you can basically make at home for a lot cheaper, and then you're controlling the ingredients, and you're not having a lot of preservatives, additives, colors, stabilizers, and things like that. So I just, you know, I just can't encourage it enough, and I know that there are people in here in, you know, this chat room that are with me on this, but I'm not sure that everybody is already, you know, doing some of these things, Andy. And, you know, you can attest to the fact that it's really nice to be able to have all these things, and you can do it no matter, even if you're an apartment dweller. You know, there's a lot of things that you can do to set up a nice supply of food for a lot less than what you would pay at the grocery store, and it's a whole lot healthier.
A lot better for you, and I think that's the key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm even, you know, I've even gotten into, you know, where I'm growing, a lot of herbs, which I do because I use the dill and the garlic and stuff in my canning, but I'm also getting into my medicinal herbs in the garden. And preserving those, you know, is basically dehydrating them. But now I'm getting an herbal medicinal cabinet of just a medicine cabinet of herbs. And that's real exciting to learn how to use those. Rather than going, you know, to get cough medicine from the pharmacy. So, you know, I do encourage you maybe to subscribe to my blog at prepperpenny.com. And, you know, sometimes I'm less busy than others and can post more. When I'm real busy right now, you know, with all the gardening and stuff, I'm not posting as much, but there's still a year's worth of information on the blog that you can go back and look at and maybe see how I've even evolved from a year ago to now. And you can see that it's a really easy process and anybody can do it.
Site, Twitter and Facebook and all that good stuff. And I'm sure there's a link to...
I am on I'm on Twitter, I am on Facebook, I'm on Pinterest, and all of you can always find me at Prepper Penny, at Prepper Penny Twitter, PrepperPenny.com, Pinterest is Prepper Penny. So I'm, you know, I just try to keep that name out there so anybody can find me in any of the mediums that I'm involved in. And you know, I'm always available. I always answer people's questions within a day. So I'm real connected to the to all of those accounts. So if anybody ever has any questions or, you know, need direction or advice on anything, I'm always available to support and help you.
Very cool. Do you, someone was asking if you happen to know the link to your Pinterest. I guess that's how you call it. What do you call it?
Yeah, let me. You know what? I'm calling that up right now. I just saw that myself. I think it's just Pinterest.com/prepper.
And we'll give you a second. While you're doing that, no problem. I'm going to let everybody know that tomorrow, of course, is Thursday. And let's see, this is the third Thursday of the...
can you hear me? Christmas Chick? Again, I'm glad I didn't say anything I wasn't supposed to say. Oh, I don't even know what to say, people. I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness. A radio host, I am not. So if you want to ask any questions, please post them, and I'll be glad to chat with you. My sun oven. Let me tell you something about my sun oven. I'm glad you asked. I live in Washington State, which is notorious for being as rainy as London, and we have a lot of overcast skies. So I have found a little trick with my sun oven that is working well for me. I have a greenhouse, and I have my sun oven in the greenhouse on days where it's not as warm as it should be, and I don't know if any of you are in the same predicament, but my ideas. I'm just recommending it. You know, I'm sure that the company wouldn't. But your sun oven works really good in a greenhouse, and I would assume that in the wintertime across the country, it would work pretty well there too. It's a little bit warmer, and so I love my sun oven. As a matter of fact, we just bought a tent trailer, also known as a pop-up, depending on where in the country you're from. But we're heading back to Wisconsin for my son's wedding in the end of next month, and so we're going to camp cross-country with the grandbabies. And it does not have an oven in it, so guess what I'm going to be taking? I will be doing campfire meals, but also will be cooking in my sun oven, so I can't wait to do that. Then somebody asked me about my meals in a jar. As Andy had indicated, I don't know if you all know about Thrive Food, but there are a lot of companies out there. I just happen to, I just love Thrive. I really do. I started buying a lot of different company foods, zeroed in on how much I liked the Thrive, and then I found out that they had consultants. And so I went ahead and became a consultant to help some friends and family get started in their food storage. And anyway, that business has kind of evolved into a nice little business for me on the side. But the meals in a jar are dry meals that I put in quart canning jars. And I have several of them posted on my blog. Hopefully, pretty soon I will be adding a lot more of them. But these are, you know how you can get, what are some of the names? Mountain House, for example, of meals like a lasagna or a beef stew or something like that you can take mm-hmm. on a hiking trail.
Right.
Andy's back. Thank goodness. Andy, take over. I'm just punting here until you got back.
Yeah, I'm here. Here at the house, we've got, Windstream? And it just died. And this whole week since we've been back, it's been horrible. It's been slow. It's been cutting in and out. And so we got almost through the whole show, and then it all of a sudden just disappeared. So fortunately, I had the Wi-Fi hotspot through Verizon here that was already hooked up and on. I just had to transfer over and connect that way and then call in instead of calling on Skype. But anyway, nonetheless, yes, we are back. So don't let me interrupt you. Continue on. We'll wrap it up when you can.
Well, as I said while you were gone, a radio host, I am not. So I was just, like I said, I was just trying to help fill in while you were gone. But to complete what I was talking about on the meals in a jar, these are meals that I can convert just about any one of my family's favorite recipes into a dehydrated version and put them in a canning jar or in a vacuum seal bag with my food saver, and you just add water. You just add them to boiling water, and you've got beef stew, chili, and all of these wonderful, wonderful meals, even beef stroganoff and stuff like that. So the meals in a jar with the dehydrated and freeze-dried foods are absolutely something that is not only good for long-term food storage because they last 5 years or more if you process them correctly, but they also save you a lot of time when things are just busy in your life. Many people will, you know, be working and have late nights. Thanks, Bob. So anyway, I'm just going to shut up now because I'm just rambling. So please,
no,
Andy, take over.
I have a question for, I think it was Janine in the chat room, I think. I'm just scrolling. Yeah, she says she cans meals like sweet and sour chicken and Mongolian beef, and I guess I could ask you this too as well, Prepper Penny. But is and when I see that and when I perceive that, I guess you just, okay, this Saturday is going to be meal preparation day, and you go in, and let's say the way you do that is you truly prepare the meal just like you're going to eat it right then. Prepare it, the sauces, the ingredients, the stir fry, whatever. Cook it as it's ready to eat, and then at that point, pour it into one of the mason jars, seal it, and then put it in the pressure canner and do it that way, and then you put it on the jar. So really, when you're ready to eat that, you know, 2 months later, you open it up, and release the air, pour it in, and just in addition, either microwave and warm it up, or just warm it up on the stovetop in the iron skillet, or something like that. So it is already cooked, ready to eat meal. That then you, that instead of putting on a plate, you put it in this can. And of course, she's saying no. So see, that's what I know about canning.
Well, there
I'm thinking,
yeah, there is a
that
difference.
Would work.
Well, the way I do my meals in a jar, I just fill a quart with the dry ingredients layered and they look all pretty and stuff like that. But the sauce and everything is in there. It's just that you've converted everything into dry ingredients, including your milk products or your butter, or, you know, whatever that recipe needs. And somebody asked in there if this is real meat. And it is real meat. It's ground beef. It's chicken. It's beef roast. And you've got ham and turkeys and all that. And it is, it's just dehydrated meat. And it rehydrates back into its original form when you've boiled it in water, you know, added it to your boiling water. The beef stew is just amazing. I'm over on my blog here real quick just to pull up one of the recipes so you can see a picture of it and a quick recipe. Let me see. I'll turn my minestrone soup. And, but... I don't cook it beforehand, Andy. I just can it dry and leave it there. And I'm going to be going on this camping trip, and you have no idea how much of this stuff I'm going to be taking with me. It's going to be great.
That's awesome. Yeah, exactly. And so I'm trying to think of the same thing. We go out in the RV and we're heading out. I may have shared with you guys earlier this week. I can't remember if I shared it on air or with our neighbors that, you know, when we were out camp, you know, in the RV, full, you know, all the comforts of home, but at the same time, you're still like, oh, I've got to cook meal, whatever. Oven, microwave, stovetop, you know, everything. And so Jen this week has been trying out to actually cook supper the last two nights, meals that very limited ingredients because you're not going to carry a whole spice rack with you in the RV and, you know, things like that. You want to try to keep things, you know, so like 4 or 5 ingredient meals that you can, a lot of them, I think she found some that you just, oven meals in 5 minutes or something like that. So she's been doing that. But I was thinking the same thing. Yeah, we've got a freezer. I can throw a few freezer things in there, but the vegetables that we freeze out of the garden. But, you know, with canning, you know, I can grab those. That's why I was asking. And, in fact, I've got, for those who don't know, Blog Talk is so awesome. We have 50 phone lines that are available to us. I could have 50 experts on the line at one time. That would be a hoot. But we have, in fact, Janine, you may have seen in the chat room, she has called in. I'm going to bring her on too if you've got a sec, Prepper, Penny, because I want to hear I want to hear how she says complete meals, including Mongolian beef and sweet and sour chicken and all this kind of stuff. So, and of course, my interpretation being a know-nothing about canning was you heard me saying, oh, so I just completely prepare the meal and then put it in the jar, then seal it, and then it's good to go. And she's like, no. So I'm going to have her come on because I want to hear her of how she does it, does maybe a complete meal in a jar, and if it would be feasible for me to do. So let's go to the phone lines right now and bring on, I guess it's Janine, as we were saying in the chat room. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. My heart's beating out of my chest. This makes me really nervous.
Oh, no worries at all. No worries at all. So obviously, I was way off when we were talking about, oh, so you just make a meal and put it in the car and steal it, and you're good to go. No, that's bad. Don't do as I say, folks out there in listener land. So you said, like, sweet and sour chicken. How's that done for me to put in a mason jar?
Okay, like sweet and sour chicken, basically you're going to make your brine, your sweet and sour sauce first. And that's, and I've got the recipe up from my canning group right now looking at it. It's you do the brown sugar, vinegar, soy sauce, ketchup, ginger, and pineapple juice and some water, and you bring it to a light boil until the sugar is dissolved. Then in the jar, in a quart jar, you layer chicken, onions, and your peppers, you know, green or red peppers, and pineapple, fresh cut pineapple. And then you pour the liquid over that to 1-inch headspace, and you pressure can it for 90 minutes. If you're doing quarts, 75 minutes for pints. Then when you go to make the sweet and sour chicken, and you can use pork also, you open up the jar, make sure you hear that whoosh sound, and you put it in a pan. And heat that up, and then meanwhile you make your rice, and then you just pour your sweet and sour chicken right over the rice.
Okay, so you're basically canning the chicken with the sauce.
Yes, and that's raw chicken. It's raw pack. See, now when I do things like this, meal in jars, it's usually raw meat. When I'm doing like beef stroganoff, that type thing, it's cooked. But if you're just gonna can the meat by itself, like I can boneless, skinless chicken breast raw pack by itself. But then I also do I also roast whole chickens in my 18 quart roaster, and then I'll remove the chicken and dump all that nice wonderful stock out, and then I get all the meat off the chickens, throw all the bones back into the roaster. Cover all the bones with water, a couple tablespoons of vinegar. That helps bring out a lot of the good stuff out of the bones. And then make stock out of that. Again, I would add in some onions and celery the second time around, not the first time around. Make a stock of that, and then I combine the two stocks together. And then I put the shredded chicken in the jars and cover it with the stock. And that's wonderful, just served over mashed potatoes or any kind of...
Questions in the chat room. Does the meat cook like in the canning process? So you put skinless, boneless chicken breast, I'm guessing raw and thawed out, into the cans uncooked, and then in the process of canning it cooks it?
Gotcha.
So that's how you would can.
That's raw pack, if you're going to do raw pack. You know, if you do meals in jars, you know, like what I'll use my raw pack chicken for is I'll take out a quart of that. I might boil up some noodles, add some Parmesan cheese, some garlic, whatever, and then throw the chicken in there at the last minute with, I keep a lot of dried, ready-to-eat cream of anything soup handy, and then, you know, I can make cream of chicken soup, cream of onion soup, whatever, and just toss it all together and you have a meal. It's great for your food storage. Same thing like ground beef. I raw pack ground beef. You just put it in the jar and you fill it with water, and then it cooks in there.
So you put ground. Let me make sure I got this straight. Now you just put ground beef right out of the grocer's counter into the jar with the water. Do all the proper steps as far as sealing it. Put it in the pressure canner, however long it takes, and then you're done.
Yeah. And your general rule of thumb with canning meats is 75 minutes pressure canned according to your altitude. I'm in Illinois, so it's 10 pounds of pressure, but it's 75 minutes for pints and 90 minutes for quarts. And, like, another thing I love to do in the summer months is I like to halfway cook meat on the grill, like those boneless country-style ribs.
Love those.
Do them on the grill, halfway cooked. And then I throw them into a quart jar, and I only fill it maybe a third of the way up with water, because it's half cooked, it'll make its own juice. Mm-hmm. And that's wonderful. Coming out of the jar, you still can taste that it was grilled. It's really good.
That is awesome. That's like when I get the country style in the store, I will actually boil them in water and to get them tender, and then put the sauce on and put them on the grill to finish them up. So I've got, you cut them with a fork. They're so they're awesome. But I just can't imagine, you know, doing the country style rib, barbecue ribs in a pressure cooker. How awesome would that be?
I go to my local butcher, and he gets me really good prices because I ask for big amounts, you know. Like on the country style ribs last year, I did 30 pounds at once. So he's able to get me a reduced price because I'm buying in such a large amount. So that's
really
good.
Buying in bulk and then saving, so.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so I guess it's like, for Penny and Janine, is that are some of these things you're talking about now, especially canning the meat, can we find that? I already put it in my in fact, we're getting an Amazon order today of some things, but I put it in my shopping cart, that the ball, everything you need to know canning book. I guess in there it would cover meat and maybe some things like you're talking about. Is that okay? Cool.
Everything. Yeah, chutneys and pickles. Peppers, all kinds of things. Yeah, it covers it all.
The complete book
is the way to go.
Yeah, and I posted a link earlier. Let me pull it back up. It was National Center for Home Food Preservation. That is an awesome site. I mean, if you're looking, you know, if you've got 30 pounds of chicken breast, it's your first time canning, going to that site is wonderful. I mean, it'll walk you right through with pictures and everything. National Center.
I've got here, let's see, stuffed green pepper soup at prepperpenny.com, and I'm looking that there.
That's a dry canned meal.
Yeah,
I just
look at that.
To,
that looks cool. So you dehydrated everything and put it in the can, and is that what it's like to
the,
me?
The meat is not dehydrated. The meat is not dehydrated. The meat is actually the freeze-dried stuff from Thrive.
Gotcha.
Because it rehydrates, but my spices and my vegetables, I will usually use my own and not go to the expense of buying it. There are some things that I obviously I do buy, but you can get by with doing drying it yourself and save a lot of money too.
Yeah, definitely.
Now the did you? Hang on, I'm looking. Okay, now you just put all the dried ingredients in a mason jar, put an oxygen absorber in the top, and then sealed it by hand. You didn't actually use a pressure canner to seal that.
That's right. That is okay. Simply dry canning. Yeah, it's just putting it in a dry jar, putting that oxygen absorber in it. Vacuum. You have to vacuum seal it to give it the shelf life. And that jar, these jars of the dry meals are good for at least 5 years, at the very least.
But now you say you talked about air sealing it, that you don't actually have a device that you put over it that sucks the air out. You just put an oxygen absorber pad in the top of it.
Some people do. And
I do.
Yeah, I happen to have a food saver, and it has the attachment to be able to vacuum
seal the jars. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
And so I actually do use both, and because, you know, I like redundancy. If there's going to be a failure, it's going to have to be a major one, because if the oxygen absorber isn't exactly prime, you're going to lose your seal. And adversely, if you don't get an exact right seal with the food saver, which I've never had anything fail that way, but, you know, at least I've got the oxygen absorber as a backup. So it just double ensures that I've got that completely airtight.
I do. I do that, too, in jars. I use an oxygen absorber, but I do the food saver with the attachment. Now, when I do it in pouches, I do the same thing, food saver into the pouch and then backpack it. And then I take one extra step, and then I take it and I put it in a Mylar bag. And
mm-hmm.
I use a hair straightener to seal the Mylar
bag.
That's funny. Then it goes in my Gamma buckets, you know, with the lids. And I also use the aluminum garbage cans. Those are great, like in a basement where, you know, there's mice. I mean, I've got several garbage cans stacked up side by side, the aluminum ones that, or the steel ones, whatever those are.
Steel, right, yep. so the rodents can't chew through them like a Rubbermaid bin or something like that.
Yeah, the link I just posted is to the jar attachment for the Food Saver. They have both the wide mouth one and the small one, small jar lid one. And they're wonderful.
Oh, that's cool. So that just goes over. You hand seal the jar, and then this slides over.
You're not using the ring. You're just using the flat lid, and you put that on the top of the jar. Then you put the jar sealer on top of it. It's got a little hole on the top, and then there's a vacuum seal hose that comes out of your Food Saver, and you put it in that little hole. Huh?
I'm sorry. That was my computer. Please. Oh. I'm so sorry.
I didn't even hear it. So, no, perfect. Okay, very cool. So you're not using the seal ring. You're just using...
Right.
No, wait.
Just the flat lid. Are you looking at the Amazon?
I'm trying to figure that out because I'm looking at the picture now. Hang on. I guess if I'd read the directions here. But now, you have a mason jar, and the lids are two pieces. You have the round flat piece with the rubber ring on it, and then you have the other screw down part, which is open. So
right.
How can you not use
when
you're the rubber?
Vacuum seal it, when you vacuum seal it, you just put the lid on it, and not the ring. And then you vacuum seal it, and then I put the ring on it after it's vacuum sealed.
Well, right. I see. So you're still putting the flat seal rubber piece on.
That's right.
On the and then you put this on top of it and seal it, and then you put the screw top on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, because the attachment won't go over that the ring.
I follow you 100% now. I exactly see.
Okay.
Okay, I was just
yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a slow learner.
I just put a link to a YouTube video that shows it, and I'm also going to put up another link to another site. There's a lady on a site, Dehydrate, the number 2 store. She has
I love
got
her.
I do too. Her videos and everything is excellent. That's how I got started was with her on doing the dry goods.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I put up a video, a YouTube video that I had done. It's actually storing grains for long-term storage, but it's still showing you how to use, how I put my stuff, my dry stuff, into long-term storage.
It's kind of a long video, but
it covers a lot of things, including the gamma lids, the 5-gallon buckets, the oxygen absorbers, the Mylar bags, and the Food Saver. So it's a good video. Yeah.
Well, ladies, thank you so much for coming on today. That is super information. I've learned so much, and we've kind of got a free weekend this weekend other than getting ready to hit the road on Tuesday. So maybe we'll either make an Amazon order or go and see if we can't find a – and I'll let you all know. I may chicken out. We may wait till we get back, and we know we're going to be here for a few weeks to make the plunge. But this is really interesting. We've been talking about it for years, and now that we've got the – garden that's producing so much, and I just again when I plugged in that second freezer, I'm like, more power bill now, and I could just go and buy a canner and get this done, and not have to worry about it or the power or anything like that. So, Prepper Penny, thank you for coming on today's show as always. I'm sure that we'll have you back on again as always. And Janine, thank you for listening today and coming on and teaching me about doing those canned meals the way that you like to do those. So, ladies, thank you, sir, very much for joining us and tuning in today.
Thank you
it
very much.
It was nice
much.
To meet you too, Janine.
Yes, very
and
nice.
And thanks everybody
for
being. she's one of my homegirls, Andy. We discovered that on the board. We're neighbors from way back when.
Oh, that is hilarious.
Yeah.
That is too
yeah.
funny.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for joining us, both of y'all. This great show. How awesome is that? Covered a lot of great topics, including even water purification and units to use that for. So just got to love that. And we thank everybody for tuning in today. And we'll be out of here in just a couple of minutes. Don't forget, tomorrow we've got Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, poultry scientist, joining us tomorrow. Not going to want to miss that. And hopefully we'll have some great live shows next week while we're on the Tractor Supply tour. So we'll end the show right after this short break.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at McMurrayHatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery.
All righty, have a great day, everybody. Love you all. We'll see you tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio.